Welcome back to the Canadian Ruck. This is Jamie coming to you from Rosse, New Brunswick. And on this this edition of the podcast, we're fortunate enough to have Brett Bukabum, outstanding lock for Canada over the years. We'll get to Brett's bio in a little bit. Just going to do a little plugging for us. Love when you hear back. When we hear back from people, make sure that you contact us. We're all over the place. We're on Twitter at Canadian Ruck, Instagram, the underscore Canadian underscore Ruck, Facebook at the Canadian Ruck, and email is thecanadianruck@gmail.com. So we've got three major social media platforms covered. I'm not on the Snapchat or the TikTok or TikTok or whatever that is, but I've got the Twitter, the Instagram, and the Facebook lined up. And of course, email, Gmail. Make sure that you contact us if you need to, if you want to talk, if you want to put your words out there. As always, though, when you're watching and listening to us, you know, we're on a lot of different platforms. We're on YouTube, we're on the Spotify, the iTunes, Google Podcasts, CastBox. Make sure you're following, you're subscribing, you're sharing. Share it out to some friends. Let them listen to it while they're driving. Let them listen to it while they're working. Let them listen to it while they're, you know, mowing the lawn, what have you. But make sure you're spreading these stories out, because it's great to hear about all these great Canadian rugby players. And hear what hear how their story came to be. If you're struggling for a place to go, not sure where to look, the simplest place is to go to our website, thecanadianruck.weebly.com. It's got all our content. All the links are there for Spotify. There's links for YouTube. There's some pictures, screenshots of the guests and myself, and a few other tidbits there for you as well. All right, so this week, our big shout-out, this pod is going to Darren Carlson. Thanks for the subscribe and for listening, Darren. It's great always to have new listeners and subscribers. Darren's over in the UK, but he is a Springboks fan, and I can't blame him. I love South African rugby. It's an amazing culture of rugby there in South Africa. So, Darren, thanks very much for joining us. It's great to have you along this journey. All right, going to look a little bit at rugby news, and our major focus, I guess, is the Southern Hemisphere this week. This pod, there's a few interesting things. One is Kieran Reid, famed All Black, played number eight there for a number of years, over 120 games with the All Blacks, 52 as captain. He had signed to go over in Japan. He's actually something in his contract where he's been able to actually come back, and he's going to play for the Counties Manukawa of the Mitre 10 League. They were able to work out some type of agreement with his club after Super Rugby Aotearoa was such a success. He decided he wanted to come back. So he'll be a huge drawing card there for the Mitre 10 League. It'll be nice to see Kieran back playing in New Zealand. Sticking with New Zealand, Scott Razor Robertson, the Crusaders coach. He's actually been hitting up Warren Gatland to help coach on the coaching staff of the Lions tour next year. And, that'll be interesting. You know, Gats is a well-renowned coach, and Razor there, he's actually guided the Crusaders to four straight Super Rugby titles, wants to expand his portfolio. He was on the shortlist for the All Blacks coaching job, but lost out to Ian Foster, as you all know. So that'll be interesting if Gats brings him along and gives him some of that international experience. And I think that would be great for Scott Razor Robertson's resume moving forward, looking for his chance to get onto the All Blacks coaching squad. Speaking of the Lions tour, it's supposed to be running in 2021. Now there's talks that they're already looking at possibly postponing to 2022. Naturally, this is due to COVID, like everything else, because traffic is being halted. You know, people aren't really allowed to travel back and forth between countries. Without spectators, SA Rugby figures, you know, from within South Africa and from outside of South Africa, SA Rugby fears it's not a financially or commercially viable to possibly host it next year. SA Chief Executive Juri Roo said it's something that they're monitoring monthly. So they haven't postponed it to 2022 yet, but it is something that they look at every month to see what the potential is. And they didn't really say when a deadline is to postpone it, but it is something that they have been talking about. So keep your eye out for that to see if that is something that will change in the coming months. That brings us to our gray area. Got an interesting thought here. So personally, maybe I'm a little biased, and I imagine a lot of you listeners might be biased as well. But to me, rugby is the ultimate team sport, where every position on the pitch has the utmost importance for team success. Rugby prides itself on that full 15-person unit. you can't stress that enough. You know, if one person goes down, it's really difficult for that full unit of players to work together. However, it is fun to see what people think are the most important positions and see how they rank. So I did a little research and I found the website The Ruck out of the UK actually held a poll ranking the importance of each position. And they ranked the top 13. So wings and locks only take up one spot each on the list. So we're going to start. We're going to start from the bottom. We're going to go 13-1. I'm going to then give you what I think my top three are. And then I'm going to hit you up to see what you think your top three are. So starting from the bottom, this is out of the Ruck website in the UK. Number 13, the wing. Good finisher, has to be fast, close to the last line of D, but tends not to see a lot of action. So that's ranked 13. 12, the outside center, similar to the inside center, maybe a little smaller, maybe a little quicker. Number 11, they've ranked inside center. Almost a second fly half, has a little more size, typically maybe a little more snarl. In Southern Hemisphere rugby, a lot in New Zealand, they use it as that second 5/8. I forget how they term it. But a lot of times they play the ball off the inside instead of the fly half. At number 10 is the lock. The engine room, often the huge line out target, but poor binding can impact the scrum, poor jumping can impact the line out. So they are important for sure, but ranked number 10 according to the Ruck. Number 9, the blindside flanker. And he's ranked 9 because they're typically primarily a defensive beast. At 8 is fullback, very high pressure position. And they argue it's not for the faint-hearted, but those that have to combine tackling, kicking, catching, and running, yet still keep a cool head while they're on the pitch. At 7 is the number 8. Vital for stabilizing the scrum, often gains valuable yards off the scrum. Must be a great tackler, must be a powerful and dynamic runner. At 6 is the loose head prop. The hooker needs a clear line of sight in the scrums. All right, and that's your loose head's prop job. This position, the loose head prop must make that happen. Also, they're becoming a little destructive. And a little more powerful recently, a little more dynamic in how they move. Now we're into the top 5, all right? I'm still excited because I was a scrum half, so my position, it hasn't come up yet. I'm in the top 5, so that's exciting for me. Number 5 is, according to the Ruck, the open side flanker. One of the toughest, most physical, yet crafty players on the pitch. Borderline, rule breaker, think of a Richie McCaw, always pushing those boundaries. Right, they need to be a fierce tackler and strong offensively. Number 4, the hooker. Get to have quick feet, have to have sure hands, and nowadays they have to be a strong runner with the ball. Think of your Dane Coles and how he moves, your Malcolm Marks, how great he is in the lineouts. Vital position for maintaining possession is the hooker. Number 3, all right, top 3 now. Get your tight head prop. Very central to the strength of the scrum, is an anchor of the scrum, and they're really becoming devastating to the opposition. In recent years, they've been just scrum coaches, what they're doing with that front row and teaching how to those tight head props, how to work over the loose head props on defensive scrums, it's been fierce. Into our top 2, happy and sad altogether, but scrum halves ranked number 2. Have to have great vision, and I think more important than anything is a scrum half has to have amazing awareness on the pitch, amazing field awareness, seeing where the players are, seeing how things develop, finding holes, finding which player is in the best position to get the ball. The awareness is, I think, an underrated term for rugby, and I think great scrum halves like an Aaron Smith, like an Afta Clerk, like a Connor Murray, they have that amazing awareness on the pitch to see what's happening, see what's developing. And naturally, they have to have speed. They have to get around the pitch very quick. Their links to the powerful play of the forwards, and they link that up with the majesty of the backs. And that brings us to number 1, your Johnny Wilkinsons, right? Your Dan Carters, your Bowden Barretts, your Richie Mwangas, your all those different cats that have played number 10 that have been amazing at it, your fly halves. And arguably, and it's a hard not to argue with this, but they're probably the most influential player on the pitch. majority of offensive options go through the number 10, and they must be a great passer. They must be a great runner. They must be a great kicker. They must be a great defender. They kind of got to do a bit of everything there. So saying that, there, you know, there's those top 13 ranks based off of the ruck out of the UK. And that brings me to my top three. I'm not going to give you an order. I'm not going to go that far, but I think if you were starting a team, so for right now, I'm in New Zealand, and I've heard rumors that they're trying to have a sixth Super Rugby team. And if I'm the owner of that franchise or the manager of that franchise, what three positions would I be looking at first to try and recruit players? I think I would be looking at a number eight. I think I'd be looking at a scrum half, and I think I'd be looking at a fly half. So two of my positions are the top two of the ruck. But my number eight, I ranked in the top three where they ranked it at number seven. I think those probably three positions are very vital, linking your backs and your forwards together, great field awareness, great powerfulness, a lot of different things that you can drive your rugby team. I think those are the three players that I'd be looking to recruit first on a new franchise. So saying that, what do you think? What are your thoughts? What positions do you find most important? Do you agree with the ruck's ranking, how they have them 13-1, wing being least important? I've got that in quotes because every player on the pitch, every position on the pitch is vitally important, all the way down to number one, which is the fly half. Do you agree with the ruck's ranking? What do you think of my thoughts of the 8, 9, and 10 being the ones that are the top three, in my opinion? Hit me back on social media. Send me an email. Send me a voice recording. Send me a voice recording. I'll do my best. I'll do my best to get you put on here. It'd be awesome. I want to hear what you all have to think. Get your thoughts out there. Get your rankings together. Talk with some of your friends and see what you can come up with as the top, your top three choices. If you want to go further, do your full list of 15 and send them in to me. That would be really, really cool. Coming up next, though, we have a true class act. We have Brett Bukaboom. Brett debuted with Canada back in June of 2012 in a match versus USA. Over 30 caps with Canada. I feel like he played more because he was always in those big games. He played in the 2015 Rugby World Cup in England with Canada. He's a fierce tackler, a hard-nosed second rower for Canada. He might not like the rankings I just went through because I had his position at number 10. Sorry, I didn't. The ruck has his position at number 10. But in all fairness, Brett played as a strong lock, but he looked like a fierce flanker out the right way that he would move around the pitch and crash into people. He played a number of seasons professionally in England, most notably with the Cornish Pirates. In the last two seasons, he was actually the captain over there. He's recently retired from the international game, from rugby itself, and he's looking forward to the next stage in life. We have a great conversation with Brett and his thoughts on rugby, and actually some things that he's doing with grassroots Iroquois rugby, and it's nice to hear that. So stick around. Brett is coming up shortly after this ad. And back to Eastward Sails. These guys are amazing. Eastward Sails LTD has been a St. John company since 1978, St. John, New Brunswick, right there on Union Street. They're a print shop specializing in wide format and specialty printing. Right, they got posters, blueprints, canvas, signs, banners, and laminations. Take a look. If you're on YouTube, take a look at that beautiful Canadian Ruck banner over my left shoulder. They did that up in a matter of minutes, basically, for me, I feel like. I sent my picture in, and bang, I get an email shortly after saying your banner's ready, along with a license plate. They also offer a great deal of art supplies, great for schools, daycare centers, and other areas. Like, they've got art supplies like crazy in there. It's amazing. If you're into art, if you know people that are, get in there and check it out. They offer online file submission with a quick turnaround. Their website is eslrepro.com. So that's eslrepro.com. Ask for Coin. Coin's the operator. He's the owner. He's the guy that you want to get in touch with. And Coin is a rugby guy. He's been playing rugby for 20 plus years. Great guy. Make sure that you get in there for all your needs. And coming up now, Brett Bukaboom. All right, and welcome back to the Canadian Ruck. This is Jamie, and we're fortunate today we have Brett Bukaboom, one of the best rugby nicknames or best rugby names that you can have is Bukaboom, and he's smiling right now, so hopefully he's not offended by that. But I loved watching you play. Just, you know, hear the commentators with your name after you making a big tackle. It was awesome. So, Brett, thanks for joining us on the Canadian Ruck.
No problem. Thanks a lot for having me, Jamie. I really appreciate it. And yeah, let's get chatting about some rugby.
Awesome. All right, let's get into it. So talk to us. How did you become involved in rugby, like high school level, university? Where did you begin?
Yeah, so I started playing around 13, 14 years old, so just before high school. And the reason I started playing is it's a big sport in Lindsay. So I grew up in Lindsay, Ontario. And a lot of players have gone on to represent Ontario and Canada from Lindsay. So there's a big rugby culture associated with Lindsay. Not only that, but it was something, because I was a hockey player, come from a family that played some hockey. So I needed a sport to keep in shape during the off season. So during the summer months, a lot of my friends and my family played rugby. So I did it as just something to, you know, stay in shape until the hockey season started. But shortly after picking up a rugby ball and playing the first couple of seasons, I just fell in love with the sport, and it's been a real passion, sometimes an obsession at times. And it really started at quite a young age, around 13 or 14 years old.
That's awesome. So it's a hard starting point nowadays with rugby when people say I play hockey or basketball, because they miss those development skills and they're fearful of getting injured. And the grassroots level's taken off, like rookie rugby in Canada is really kind of taken a hold. How do you think that can impact, what are your thoughts there, I guess, not to throw a curveball at you, but what do you think of the rookie rugby programs that are being run?
I think there's some great programs that have started recently in Canada. And I just, the more people, the more exposure to rugby that kids have, I'm confident more people will fall in love with the sport, more people will play the sport. And it's a great way to grow the game. You know, there's some great initiatives out there that I can see already that have grown the game quite a bit just from traveling back here in the summer. And well, with that being said, I've just recently started coach and train with the Rugby Ontario Academy teams. And there's like every weekend, there's a couple hundred kids out there that are, you know, from under 15 all the way to under 18, under 19. And there's hundreds of kids playing because they're exposed to rugby at such a young age through those great initiatives that you mentioned.
That's awesome. So you're that right now, like this, like past weekend, you're out and there's a couple hundred kids.
Yeah. There's a couple hundred kids. The boys and girls were there. They obviously train at different times, and they have to keep in mind the social distancing. So the drills are geared towards that, just for player safety as well. There's a lot of kids that show up at this Rugby Ontario Academy.
That's amazing. That's wicked numbers, especially during COVID times. That's really impressive. And we'll get to this later, but you're also doing some stuff with Iroquois Roots Rugby as well, I believe. So we'll get to that one later, unless you want to talk about it now and throw it into the mix with what you're with.
Well, I guess it kind of goes hand in hand of what we're just speaking about. So, yeah, Iroquois Roots Rugby, you know, we just through social media, I've seen some players donate kit and meet some players. So I felt I had a fair bit of kit that I wasn't sure what to do with. And I thought, you know, it's a great program. It's great to support a program such as that helps grow the game in indigenous circles. So I got in touch with them through social media, and I was lucky enough that one of the kids, he's actually from Lindsay. So I went and met him and his dad, and exchanged of kit, and gave him a signed shirt as well.
That's really cool. Great way to get kids involved in the game when somebody like you, you know, play nationally, that, you know, just says, yeah, I'd like to help out, here's some kit for you guys, autograph stuff. That's a great way for excitement, and see the excitement when kids are seeing, okay, here's Brett Bukabum, this is amazing, we've got a national player here, he's willing to help out. What were your thoughts going into that? Why did you want to reach out and help with that aspect?
Well, I think it's something that's come with the rugby ethos and like the culture around rugby, whereas you want to grow the game. And I've had some great mentors and coaches that, you know, have instilled a lot of rugby into me, and like the way the game's played and the way we treat each other with respect, integrity and whatnot. So it's just the way to give back to the community. It's a way to stay involved in rugby at the same time. I hope to be heading to one of those sessions once COVID kind of relaxes and they can begin training again. But circling back to your question, it's just a mentality that I, take on full heartedly of giving back to the community, giving back to that rugby community that has been so influential on my career.
That's really, really highly commendable. Just to reach out and just basically giving them the shirt off your back to help out. That's highly commendable. Says a lot about your character and I guess also a lot about what the rugby culture is, the family aspect and helping out and, donating time and resources, whatever you have. So that's really cool. Let's look at your pro experience. You were over in England for a while at Plymouth and Cornish. Talk to us, I guess, about what it's like playing pro rugby in England as opposed to, it was before, Major League Rugby was in Canada and the United States. So talk to us about that difference. What was the draw for you to go to England and play there?
Well, really, rugby was such a huge passion of mine that the first contract that came up was Plymouth Albion. It was shortly after I earned my first couple of caps on a summer tour in 2012. And it was an opportunity to play in a professional environment and train in a professional environment and play year round, because in Canada at that time, basically only the sevens players were getting the funding at the time in those particular years. So, the type five and forwards had, if a contract came about, you had to jump on it because it's an opportunity to play professionally and train professionally full time. And really it was such to move to England and play professionally every day, I jumped at the first opportunity that a team offered me a contract. Yeah. And then from Plymouth, Plymouth, we struggled in the 3 years I was there. It was, there were some stressful times. There were some financial problems with the club. However, I met, it was great just to play in a fully professional league week in and week out. And there's some great teammates I played with that have gone on to play for England and gone on to play in the Premiership. Then I was lucky enough to be able to sign with the Cornish Pirates, which are, a strong team in the Championship. And there was a couple of Canadians there at the time, Matt Evans and Aaron Carpenter, that knew I was looking for a different club, and they talked to the coaches. The coaches brought me in, and I spent the last 5 years of my career playing there. And I absolutely loved every minute of playing with the Cornish Pirates. There's some great teammates there that I was lucky enough to play with. There's some outstanding coaches there. I think they have bright futures in rugby, those coaches there. And the support around the community was outstanding. Is a great club to be a part of, and I really cherish those memories and those 5 years playing there.
That's awesome. It must have been difficult, though. You're playing professionally in England. You're having a great time. You're, playing with some of the best rugby players in the world, in Europe for sure, but in the world. As you said, many have gone on to play for England and, in the Premiership. But you're Canadian. You played with Rugby Canada. How difficult was that for you to be in England and then, traveling about, not really getting a lot of practice time, probably before events, before matches with Canada? How was that experience? Was that difficult? Did you enjoy it? Did you learn from it?
Looking back at it, it was tough going back and forth between the November and June windows and playing club rugby, because really it's a lot of rugby played through the year, so there wasn't much time off to recuperate, to recover, and it probably affected some injuries and potentially the playing for longer, playing for a couple of years longer, because we'd, as international, well, playing with a tier two country and then playing professionally, you know, the goals weren't necessarily the same for the teams. And oftentimes it involved training year round with very little break between the professional season and the international window. So lots of times, you know, you play, the club season would start in September. We go all the way through, play, then play in those November windows and play all the way to about May or April. And then the June windows open up again. So you couldn't really take a month off after the season and recover. You had to continue to train and stay fit for those June international windows. And then once those games were done in June, it's straight back to preseason because you don't want to miss much of preseason. So really it is quite an extended season for, I know I was in that boat, and I know quite a few Canadians that, you know, had to play basically year round just to keep a contract and to obviously play for your country.
Yeah. It sounds like it would be rewarding, but very difficult, hard on the body, taxing on, you know, the mental aspect as well when you're not getting those downtimes. So, yeah, I mean, looking back, you probably would still do it, but I guess that leads into to Major League Rugby. How important and how valuable of a resource can that be for Rugby Canada or Rugby USA or what have you?
Yeah, it can be huge just to grow the game, get more exposure, you know, bring more children playing rugby, you know, and get it on TV. So it's just that exposure. So get more people to play. And then with MLR and with the international, so with Canadian and American guys playing there, it's just good to have them playing, you know, in Canada and America, whereas the goals of probably Rugby Canada and USA Rugby and MLR are pretty similar to those international teams, whereas if you're over in England or playing abroad, you know, the clubs and the rugby union may not align. So yeah, it's great to have the best Canadian players playing week in and week out at a high level and getting that exposure to better rugby in a professional environment. So that, I think the MLR can bring some great things to rugby. It can increase exposure and expose those international players to, you know, high performing rugby week in and week out.
It's also, yeah, 100%. I agree. I think it'll be great. I think it's also great for coaches too, like homegrown coaches, gives them a chance to apply their trade in a professional manner, and as opposed to, you know, maybe go to university and that's as high as you get or whatever. But it's also a great way for players like yourself that have retired, maybe that want to give back, you know, that you get into coaching and you're working like with Aaron Carpenter in Toronto or what have you. But there's a lot of, I think, valuables to having that league for sure. So let's talk about the 2015 Rugby World Cup. You're in England, you know, the birthplace of rugby. At this point, you had played 3 years, I believe, with Canada. Talk to us about that experience being in England for the World Cup. I mean, they flamed out pretty bad there in the round robin, the group stages. But talk to us about your experience and what that was like for you.
Well, you know, we knew it was going to be a huge event, the Rugby World Cup in England in 2015. It was we were kind of in a bubble to begin with. We had to train we're training quite hard the weeks leading up to it. So we didn't really see how big it would be until I think, well, some of the media coverage was quite good coverage of us and the teams that we'd see on television over there in England. But I think the eye-opening experience for the majority of the Canadian team would have been that first bus ride to Millennium Stadium or Principality Stadium in Cardiff now. So we were playing Ireland in our opening game in Cardiff. So it's a huge rugby city already. But normally the bus ride would take about 2 minutes to get over to the stadium. But as soon as we got out of the building and went to that bus, there was a sea of green. There's Irish supporters everywhere in the streets, in the pubs, everywhere across Cardiff. So it probably took us about 20 minutes to get to the stadium.
40 Canadians trying to get on a bus in red with green everywhere else.
Exactly. And it took us about 20 minutes just to get to the stadium, which was literally, we could have walked too faster, but it just was a real eye opener to see, you know, they said, well, it's the third biggest sporting event in the world, I believe, the Rugby World Cup. So, and you can see how passionate a lot of the nations are about it. You know, basically that first game for us, though, was an Ireland home game, because I remember just in warm up and just as you're walking off the field at halftime, stuff like that, just looking up and seeing a sea of green again, because it was so close to Ireland, and Ireland rugby fans are so passionate that they basically sold out Millennium Stadium, and is basically like a home game for them. So I think that was an eye-opening experience for myself and a lot of other Canadian teammates.
And it'd be daunting, because Millennium holds like what, 70,000 people?
Yeah, I think just over 70,000 people.
So it wasn't green and red like a Christmas tree. It was green like an evergreen forest or something, I imagine.
It was for the most part completely green, and you'd see a pocket of a couple of red shirts every now and then, or a Canadian flag. So yeah, that was quite an experience, just to see how big other nations treated rugby and how passionate their fans were. And then following along for the rest of the World Cup, you know, the stories weren't quite, there wasn't quite as passionate Irish supporters with our following games, but still there was a huge following. Even like there's quite a few Canadian fans that traveled across to England, and their support was outstanding, you know. We'd meet them, in the pub after the game, saying a quick hello and thank you for their support. But, for being a non-rugby playing country, you know, the support in England from Canadian fans was outstanding.
That's really cool. I mean, I remember watching those games. I was teaching. But I'd have the game streaming in class on the smart board for the kids to watch while they're working, and just little things like that. It's really neat. So that's a really cool experience for you. Really admirable for you to be there with Canada and doing your best to make the red and white proud. So well done. Rugby World Cup's always a great experience. Like you said, I think it is the third highest behind soccer, and I think it's cricket. Maybe.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
And I think Japan there, the 2019 was the largest grossing Rugby World Cup to date too. So it just keeps growing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. So Brett, we're at the spot now where we do a quick fire. So it's kind of a different aspect. So
all right.
You're not meant to think a whole lot. Some of the questions you have to, but we'll see how it goes here. This is always fun.
All right.
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Best team you ever faced?
Ireland. Probably at 2015 World Cup. Yeah.
That was a tough match.
Yeah.
Right. Best player you ever faced?
That's a tough question. I think going back a few years, my first season in Plymouth, Jimmy Gopperth was playing for the Newcastle Falcons then. And I was quite amazed at his skill level and his the type of player he was. And he's had a great career, not only in New Zealand, but in Europe, playing for Leinster and Wasps as well. So he was a great player that I played against. That's probably the first name that comes to mind. As well as, I think, Connor Murray and Johnny Sexton would be up there as well. They're two world-class standoffs, 9 and 10. So
yeah, good 9-10 combo.
Yeah.
All right, so next one, toughest player you ever faced. And for that one, I take it it's a 1v1. They have the ball, and it's just somebody think I'm a little scared here, but I know I got to stick my head and try and make this tackle.
That would probably be Gorgodza from Georgia. I think he's retired now. He played in France for a long time, but I remember we played Georgia in a warm-up game to the 2015 World Cup, and I put in a good tackle against him, put in a good, good shot on him, but I definitely came out worse for wear on that. I think my shoulder's still bugging me just from that one tackle.
Is he their eight man?
Yeah, he would play. He play all across the back row. He played eight, seven, or six.
So I think somebody else chose him as the toughest player they ever faced too.
Yeah.
Right, best match you were ever a part of.
I'd say that my first cap was pretty memorable. We played USA in Kingston and had a good solid win against them. So I think that would be a memorable moment that sticks out for me. Yeah.
That's fair. No offense to any American listeners, but anytime we can beat the US, especially at home, it's very memorable. All right, Brett, what's your favorite rugby tradition?
I think the favorite rugby tradition is just that you bury the hatchet, you have a couple pints with opposition, and that's really, what's special about rugby and what makes it so special is that camaraderie and that integrity, that honesty. After the game, you're able to go and have a pint with the opposition.
Yeah, it's not many sports where you can shake hands after a game and stand and chat with them, right? So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I like that one too. Best team you ever played with?
Okay.
You might offend people with that one, but give it an honest go.
I think, so from my last season with the Cornish Pirates, so this season just ended 2019-2020, I think that was the best team I was a part of. We finished third in the shortened season, and if we had played the rest of the season, I would have bet we would have finished second. However, due to COVID and the pandemic, our season was cut short. But again, we had some outstanding coaches. We had players with a lot of international experience and with a lot of great local talent as well, some great English players as well. We didn't have too many flash players, but we are a really good team. We're a really good team.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. What's your rugby nickname?
Books.
Books.
Okay. Books,
just simply Books.
Yeah. Well, that's been my nickname ever since I started playing rugby. And now that I'm in the real world, now that I'm working and golfing now, people are calling me by my first name, and I'm looking around,
not answering.
Like, who's that? Yeah.
Yeah. My wife, I think she only saw me play one game before I had to hang up my cleats. And if we're out somewhere and she'll be saying my name and, I don't hear her, she'll yell my rugby nickname and my head just whips automatically.
Well, what's your rugby nickname?
Moon.
Moon. Okay.
Nothing to do with my butt.
Okay.
Back in 94, my high school team toured UK. And when we were in Wales, their high school coach and my coach got talking, and he said, I reminded him of Rupert Moon, who played a few games with Wales at number nine. And it stuck for the last, almost 30 years. All right. So,
okay. Yeah.
What's the best nickname you ever heard?
Oh, there's some good ones. There's a bit of a story behind one that jumps out. We nicknamed one guy on our Cornish Pirates team the optician, because he got mad one time in a pub and crumpled one of our teammates' glasses with one hand. So his nickname for the next little bit was optician. And with that being said, there's another one that jumps to mind. He was a player, again, from the Cornish Pirates. He's known to enjoy, the Colonel's chicken every now and then. The stop at KFC quite a bit. So his nickname was Tucky.
Tucky. Nice. Not sure that's one that you want, but it works.
Yeah. But it stuck. It stuck.
Who was the player that you loved to smash?
Oh. To be honest, I think it just comes down to some position hating stuff.
You're gonna say scrum half, aren't you?
So it mostly be the backs that try to step you or make you look bad. So that those are ones you have to save a bit of energy for.
Relish a little and bit.
When you see those high numbers in a breakdown, you have to kind of make them regret going in that breakdown. So
pretty much anywhere from 10 to 15.
Yeah. Any double digit numbers. Yeah. They got a bit of a target on them.
All right. What was your rugby superstition, or did you have any?
I had two, I guess you can say. So the night before a home game with the Pirates, I'd have a curry. I don't know. It just started as a fluke, kind of. I had curry the night before a game, and then I think we went all of 2018 without losing at home, so it stuck.
All curry, that's right.
Yeah, and then the match day superstition would be I wouldn't want to waste as too much energy in the warm-up, so I'd always be the last one in the changing room.
So that was the same way.
Yeah. About a minute before the warm-up's supposed to start, that's when I jog out there.
That's fair. Who are three that you would take golfing with you? Can be anybody. Can be rugby players. It can be historical figures.
Okay. Well, I'm going to – first one I'll say, Matt Evans. He's a good friend of mine, and I played a long time with him, both with Canada and the Cornish Pirates. Who else? Historical figures. I think I'll stay with rugby players. I like. Sure. There's a couple of good players from our Cornish Pirates team that are quite a bit of fun too. So I'll say John Stevens and Kyle Moyle. So there's some good golfers in there, and a lot of fun will be had on that golf course.
Are you sure you want to take good golfers though? Like, you know, you want to represent, right? So
yeah. Well, John Stevens isn't a good golfer, so I'm throwing his name in there.
As long as you're not last, right?
Yeah.
All right. Chips or cookies?
I'm cookies okay. For sure.
Yeah. What kind?
Can't go wrong with chocolate chip cookies or like M&M cookies. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. French fries or onion rings?
French fries.
French fries or poutine?
Poutine. Poutine, nice. For sure. I haven't had that in a while, so I need to get back on the Canadian diet. And
there
get
you
some
go.
Poutine.
That's right. Favorite beer?
I'm not too picky, but I go, as long as there's alcohol in it. But I don't mind Coors Light or Silver Bullets. And then there's a good beer, a good ale that I liked down in Cornwall. They're our main sponsor for the team, Tribute. I enjoyed that quite a bit as well.
Good. All right. What's a guilty pleasure? Oh. Cookies and beer?
Yeah, probably just beer. Probably that's the lone guilty pleasure. I have
too many trips up the Coors Light Mountain.
Yeah, too many silver bullets. Yeah.
Right. Best place for a post-match beer?
It would have to be, again, this is going back to my time in England, and when we'd play Jersey at home, so Jersey away at their ground, because it's one of the Channel Islands just north of France, so we'd have to fly in the day before, then we'd leave the day after. So usually that night was quite an experience in Jersey with with the team.
All right. What series are you binge watching right now?
I'm not binge watching any series at the minute.
Okay.
NHL playoffs, I guess. There watching the playoffs.
My Leafs lost out last night, so
yeah. Same here. So, yeah.
All right. Well, what's your favorite movie?
I'm going with a classic here, The Shawshank Redemption.
Nice. I think a few guys have said that one. That's a classic. Yeah. All right. So who would play you in the Netflix movie of your life?
Cool. so it had to be an actor with that went through rapid transition of losing hair.
Bruce Willis?
Yeah, any bald actor, I guess, or someone who didn't have a lot of hair, I'd be happy with. Yeah.
Who would play the leading opposite? Who would play the leading lady?
Oh.
It's your movie. You can pick whoever you want.
Yeah. I'm thinking of the, we'll go with Kate Hudson. Been a big fan of her since Almost Famous. So, yeah.
Yep, that's a good selection. All right, so that's it for the quick fire section. We only get a few questions left, so that's always a little fun. All right, so back kind of at rugby here. So, Brett, who had the biggest impact on you as a player? You talked a lot about your coaches over in Europe, in particular at Cornish, but who, as a player, maybe it was when you're in high school, maybe it was nationally, maybe it was in England, who had the biggest impact on you?
I think that's a tough question to narrow down because there's so many coaches and so many people that influence your career that it can't just come down to one. And obviously my family had a big influence on me. They're huge supporters. My mom and dad would come and visit quite often when I was living in England and playing in England. But in terms of coaches and mentors, I'd say around the Lindsay area, because it's quite a hotbed, there's a lot of people that influence my career. To name a couple would be tough, but I'll try to name a couple. There's my high school coach. He was his name is Bruce Barrett, and he coached at the Lindsay Rugby Club as well, and he's a great man, and he was really influential on the people he coached. Chris Silverthorne, he's now with the Toronto Arrows, but he's from Lindsay again and had a huge influence on my career. He coached me with the Canada Under 17 program where I first started playing, I guess, nationally with Canada. But yeah, then there's a few others, like Tim Murdy. He's out at Shawnigan Lake School. I was lucky enough to get a scholarship there, and he was my coach for high school and then the Canada Under 20 program. And then at University of Victoria, Doug Tate, he's done an outstanding job. And Rick Fairley, they've done an outstanding job building that program and making it one of the top university programs in Canada. And then more recently, there's been some great coaches involved with the Canadian team, like Graham Moffat. He's a great coach. Mike Shelley, Kieran Crowley was a great coach that really gave me my first opportunity to play international rugby. Then over in England, there's a couple. There's James Scaisbrook. He was a coach at Plymouth. He was a great young coach. He's a bright future in the game as well. And Graham Daw, he played for England in the 90s. He was really influential in my during my time at Plymouth. And then more recently at the Cornish Pirates, we had an outstanding coaching group. There was Alan Paver, Gavin Cattle, Chris Morgan, Matt Jess, and Chris Sterling. And all of them are bright rugby brains, and they're great people as well. They have great personalities. They're really, you know, they're outstanding individuals, and I have a lot of respect for those coaches that I mentioned. Again, I'm kind of I'll missing a few, and I apologize in advance if I missed a few, but there's been a lot of influential coaches, and then there's been also a lot of influential teammates. You know, ultimately, you want to see your teammates succeed, and you want to succeed together as a team. So I've had some really great teammates that I've looked up to and respected and have a lot of time for because of their impact on my rugby career.
So, well, talk to us about that. Talk to us about what makes a great team player. Like you're as a coach, I coach high school now in rookie rugby. And for me, I try to be open with my players. I try to be a straight shooter with them while also making sure that they understand the values and culture of what rugby is. And when I listen to you talk, you're praising a lot of coaches. So to me, as a coach, you're one of those guys that probably worked your tail off at practice, trained harder than anybody else, and accepted feedback as best as you can. So for me, if I'm coaching you, you'd probably be the guy that I'm looking to that would be doing a little bit extra. Mm-hmm. For you as a player, what are those things that you look for in good qualities from your teammates?
Some of that comes down to what you mentioned before, you know, that work ethic, that want to go above and beyond for the team. And their ability to perform week in and week out, because there's a lot of respect that could be given to teammates just based on their performance through the season or through a batch of games. So that's some great stuff they could do. Work ethic and professionalism, and then the ability to back up performances. Those are three key things that I think most people would look for in good teammates. And not only that, it's their ability, you know, off the pitch to, you know, become friends, to their approachability and their demeanor off the pitch as well. Their willingness to help in certain situations. You know, there's a lot of tough situations that can arise, and you want a teammate that will, you know, have a conversation with you or, you know, inspire you to be better, you know, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch as well.
Yeah. It sounds like you're saying a lot, just those basic rugby virtues, you know.
Yeah.
Humble, no ego, no assholes, things like that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Exactly. What do you, as a rugby player, what do you want to be remembered for?
I think the main thing I just... I guess there's a few things, but just that I think it comes down to those three things I was just saying before, like the work ethic, professionalism, then the ability to have a consistent performance, being able to put in consistent performances. But that's just strictly on the field. So strictly on the field, but then off the field, it's again, getting out in the community, trying to grow the game, growing the grassroots level, helping out in the community as much as you can. You know, that's something that I really tried to do when I was overseas, both in Plymouth and with the Cornish Pirates. I coached as much as I could, and I took on the last couple of years, I volunteered and coached local men's teams and local colleges just to give back to the community and to grow the game in that area, because you could have a lot of influence on, you know, on some people growing up, on some younger generations, just by giving your time to them and just being there for them, trying to help them through rugby, and then and just trying to influence them in a positive manner.
Yeah, that's great that you can do that. That's giving back to the game, all of that stuff is just it's admirable work for sure. So my understanding is you're done, you've retired, but you're young, right?
I'm young. I'm just about to turn 30.
Yeah.
But I could have probably played for a couple more seasons, but it's a tough decision to make because I knew I would have been staring down at least one more than like at least a couple more surgeries the longer I played. And it's that ability to make the decision is an extremely tough decision. And there's, you know, I absolutely love playing rugby professionally for the Cornish Pirates and for Canada, but there comes a point where, as an athlete, you want to go out on your own terms. And I knew the longer I kept on playing, the more likely it was that a doctor was going to tell me, you know, you should think about hanging your boots up, or you should think about, you know, other career choices. So it was a decision that, you know, when I began playing professionally, that I wanted to make myself. Well, not to sound selfish, but it's a decision that I didn't want to take it. I didn't want to take it out of my hands. I wanted to do it.
It's not selfish.
On my own terms. So, that's kind of what it boiled down to. You know, I still think I could play for another. I could have played for another up to five seasons, but it's that balance of what are you giving up in the future. I know my body's already struggling at the minute, and I'm just about to turn 30. So I knew the longer I kept on playing, the more than likely that I'd end up, you know, a fairly old crippled man at the age of even 40 years old. So yeah. it's an extremely tough decision with that being said.
Well, you're being true to yourself, right? Like you said, when you started professionally, you wanted to go out on your own terms, and mm-hmm. you made that decision. Your heart's telling you one thing, but your brain's saying another, and it's a constant chess match, man. You saw that. So saying that, so what are you doing now?
So at the minute, I'm just, I'm on the job hunt. So I'm searching for a career. Luckily, I was quite lucky when I was at Plymouth Albion that I completed my undergrad there, and then I completed a master's there while I was playing professionally as well. So I have a master's in business and management. So hopefully,
that's impressive to do that while you're playing professional rugby.
Oh, it was a tough, stressful year, but I'm very glad I got the opportunity to do that and complete that master's. So hopefully I'm looking for a career in, you know, the business avenue, although really I'm open to anything. And I'd like to think with my professionalism and work ethic that I'd do fairly well in whatever career that ends up opening its door to me. But with that being said, I'm going to coach as much as I can. So give back to the community, give back to Rugby Ontario, and hopefully work my way up to be one of the top coaches in Canada as well. Then currently at the minute, I'm actually helping out Doug Wooldridge's family at their family auto parts store in Lindsay. So
okay.
I'm keeping busy working 8 to 5 there. They just needed a hand during the pandemic. And Doug's mom gave me a call, heard I was back in town, and I was willing to work. So I've been working there the past couple months, and it's been a learning curve, but I didn't know anything about cars before. Well, I knew a bit, but now I'm getting by.
That's awesome. Rugby community stepping up to help each other too. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great. Last, any great rugby stories you're willing to share with us? You know, throw an old mate under the bus or something fun, or you don't have to. Some people tell some, and some say no. I want to keep those ones secret or whatever. So it's up to you.
Yeah. Well, when you fired those questions across, I find it tough to not throw anyone under the bus by telling a story like that. But we can leave the player unnamed.
Sure.
He'll know. Well, to narrow it down, he was a Canadian player, and we were at this Army training camp before the Rugby World Cup in 2015. And this Army training camp was the toughest, probably 2 days of physical training we would ever do. And so one player, you know, these Army guys would constantly go around and berate us, you know, belittle us, yell in our faces. And you just, you know, most of us just ignored them. But there's a couple that chose to respond back to them. So one guy was doing sit-ups, and he was wondering, the instructor was wondering why he couldn't hold his knees together to do a proper sit-up. And the instructor asked him, "Do you have big balls, sir?" And the player responded, like, "The boys tell me I have pretty big balls, sir. Yes." So that's a memory that sticks out quite vividly, and it brings a lot of laughter whenever I you know, remind myself of that story, or that pops up in my head.
What did the instructor do? Did he laugh, or did he?
I think so. They're really serious and quite aggressive with their insults, but yeah. I think he just had to turn away and try not to laugh in front of us all, because he would have caused the whole room to erupt, and it was a pretty serious camp we are at.
That's a good story. Maybe someday you can email me who it was, and I won't tell anybody, but that's good.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, Brett, thanks very much for chatting with us today at the Canadian Rock. It's been a pleasure having you on, and we wish you the best in your job hunt. I'm sure something will come up with your work ethic, your drive, and your personality. So cheers, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me, Jamie. Appreciate it. And thanks for having me. You have a great program, so we look forward to seeing more of this in the future.
Cheers. Great stuff from Brett Bukaboom. Thanks very much, Brett. Really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. That was awesome. It was so great of you. We also talked too about maybe in the future that he and I and a couple of his old mates would do a little round table. It'd be a lot of fun. So Brett, when you listen to this, keep that in mind. We'll see what we can get set up. That would be great. Coming up next, we're gonna have a great guy. Hubert Bynes is coming on, as is Rod Snow. We also have Matt Heaton and Pat Parfrey coming up, along with Sophie Duguid and a couple of refs, and Jonathan Kaplan and Nigel Owens. So stay tuned for those. As always, I need to say a huge thank you to the essential workers, the sports staff, all the volunteers that have been working during the global pandemic. Without you, things would probably be a lot worse than they are. So thank you. Thank you very much. Need to say thanks to our music supplier, Ben Sound Music. As always, feel free to request topics for future podcasts. Drop me a line, social media, or through email. Let me know. And don't forget about the gray area of the week of this pod. Make sure that you're putting your top three out there, top three positions. And that'll be interesting. I want to see what people have to say. So until next time, this is Jamie. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay sane. Most importantly, keep on rocking.